This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebeck.com. And I hate to start on a really sad note, but I think we're obliged that we have to bring out that story that came to a very sad conclusion in New York. I had heard over the weekend that Juan Becerra, who has worked for Toby Sheets and the Steve Asmussen barn for the last several years, an extensive period as an exercise rider and as a kind of a foreman, an assistant for Toby. And on Friday, fell from a horse that was galloping. And was in dire shape right away. And passed on Monday. And the word started to spread yesterday and Tuesday and yesterday. I exchanged some notes with Toby, who I have an open mic for Toby to share his thoughts. Basically, Toby Sheets has got full autonomy in New York year-round with the Asmussen barn and does a tremendous job. And he said this morning that he just is pretty devastated and maybe down the road he'll come say a few things. But Toby and Humberto Chavez and everybody in New York that knew Becerra just talked about how sweet and generous and kind Becerra was. Leaves a wife and three children and a couple of grandchildren. His brother, who works in Kentucky, started a GoFundMe, and overnight, a $5,000 donation, an anonymous donation, and lots of others. Literally in 24 hours, they had only set an $8,000 goal, but that was smashed in less than 24 hours. His whole family, his brother, he's got another brother that Dave Grenig reported about that works for the Bromans up in Chestertown. So very, very difficult. And, I'm thinking about it. The barn, this must go back 10, 12 years, and I'm going to forget. Oh, my God. Former jockey and exercise rider, very similar situation, and that happened at Saratoga. The speculation is that Becerra was stricken, as he rode, to fall off. It's not like the horse was working. The horse was just galloping, and it doesn't matter now, but never regained consciousness, and it's... We talk about the horses and John Nichols. Thank you, John. Parker Buckley is who I was thinking of. that, was a good rider and then later was exercise riding. And he, same thing, had a stroke or an aneurysm. And really, very, very, very oddly similar. So feel terrible, and we'll send out the link to the fundraiser and send our sympathies and thoughts to Toby and everybody in the Asmussen camp and really everybody on the backstretch in New York. And Umberto Chavez told Dave Greinich there'll be a service in New York. It's been on the human front, as if we don't anguish enough, just on so many levels, when it comes to, horses and the dangers associated. I'll talk to Tony later, actually. I'll bring it up with him. But, whether on the racetrack or away from it, untimely passings. And one thing that we didn't get a chance last week in the wake of Breeders' Cup to discuss was Ben Masson from the Thoroughbred Daily News, 31, you want to talk untimely. I mean, God, 31. And they're doing some nice things. Sue Finley and the staff at TDN are, they have a really lovely idea involving new vocations and a dedicated stall in Ben's memory. So thoughts in that direction as well. There's actually, I've got others. I mean, it's just, I wanted to get those two in. So, all right, let's try to, it's very hard. The riders, there's on average two riders a year. And when I say riders, you think of jockeys, but it also counts for, the exercise riders. And I think this is at least the second in New York. And there's been others. It has, been a dangerous and rough year on that front. But on the jockey side too, they count, since World War II, when they started to count and keep track, an average of two riders a year will be killed. And with all the focus too on the horses, remember that the jocks are facing, staring down injury and paralysis and death at all times. Try to turn to some cheerier topics. This is semi. This is actually upbeat in a interesting way. Over the last couple of days, the discussions that we've had about, and I brought it up yesterday with Tim Layden, the way in which the industry has responded when there's been something that is, viewed in some cases as a crisis or in other cases just as, incidental and something, that needs to be addressed. Well, the West Virginia dead horse at the landfill incident, which ultimately came to be looked at as, a series of mishaps, but also, a negative publicity opportunity for the people who relish those opportunities. There's a very positive response that is going to come out of this. And the West Virginia Racing Commission on Tuesday said that they're going to add a medical review board for Charleston and Mountaineer. And they plan to include necropsies and, you know, have a, you know, a very, you know, current and to the moment approach, which has been, you know, which has been lacking. And if you're looking for a positive out of a, you know, situation that was, you know, was immediately, you know, used to try to embarrass the industry, here's the positive that, you know, came out of that incident. They're going to actively adopt the Mid-Atlantic strategic plan. You know, this is something that we talked about with Alan Foreman and, you know, all the THA members in the Mid-Atlantic and up to, you know, New York too, of course. And you know, I went to that organizational meeting when this was introduced at Delaware. And again, I you know, I brought this up, you know, the other day as, you know, as another example, you know, for the people that are so eager to say that there's no coherent approach and that the you know, industry is powerless. I mean, those are just people spouting off. They're not people that are actually following the internal mechanics of industry response and the Mid-Atlantic strategic plan to reduce fatalities, you know, has in a very specific measures and approaches, and you know, it's being adopted and already utilized. So the addition of necropsies, that's a big positive. And again, like I said with Tim Layden yesterday and later with Sid, the industry has made more progress in a short span of time than in all of its previous history. And you know, the critics can, you know, can attack as much as they want, but you know, the best response to that is the specifics of what's been advanced and what's been achieved. And you know, in every jurisdiction, is it fast enough? Is the system perfect for the implementation of, you know, widespread change? No, it's not perfect at all. And for those who then turn around and scream, USADA, that's going to solve, it's not going to solve anything. It doesn't solve anything. It doesn't address 90% of the things that people are arguing about on a daily basis. It's got nothing to do. For those that are screaming federal legislation, why don't you go read what it is and then check back? And also make sure you figure out how they're going to pay for it, because they're going to add a layer of takeout. That's what they're going to do. They're not saying that now, but that's what they're going to do. They took that provision, the earlier editions of that bill. It said specifically that takeout increases could not be implemented to pay for the plan. They took that out in the latest. So that tells you all you need to know. They're going to make horse players pay for it. FYI. But that was good for West Virginia for responding, even though they were sort of, you know, they were hoodwinked on that whole, you know, photo op. Yesterday at the sale, a lot of racing prospects changed hands. Seth Klarman bought out partner Bill Lawrence on most of those Klarovich Lawrence horses, like Annals of Time and Built a Suit. Some others went elsewhere. Focus Group went elsewhere. Frontier Market as well. The top seller was New York Central. The nice the Maryland Sprint winner, $240,000. That's this Khalid Mishref again. This horse is going to Saudi Arabia. Let's take a timeout. We've got Dick and Pete in the first hour. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Woke up this morning.
We're back at the races, coming up on 20 into hour one here on Thursday. Pete Fornatale, who we threatened to bring you yesterday several times. Pete had as wacky and frenetic a morning as I was having yesterday with a painter here and with the guys doing the kitchen renovation, and you're chasing after buses like Spider-Man.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, this bus driver has a bad habit of coming early. So by the appointed time of parents' bus in the morning, he was gone. And that set things into complete chaos because I had a carefully timed morning to the minute, including an at the races appearance. I allowed a full, 90 minutes for my trip to the Department of Buildings. That ended up being a Kafka-esque experience, but I did come out on the other side. I would have been able to report for duty at 11, but then I understand your schedule, understandably, with all the good stuff you had going on, got behind. So we rescheduled for today. A lot calmer now in the bunker, have the workout in, getting ready to do some recording today, and all systems are good.
Well, then let's dive in. And, of course, the most interesting post Breeders' Cup topic for players is the log of the bets from the Breeders' Cup betting challenge. And I tell you, players, Pete, are incredibly impatient, because last year I think it took about maybe 17 days or 3 weeks before we saw the plays. Here, like 45 minutes after after Saturday night, people were like, where's the contest plays?
It's unbelievable. I had a couple. It's like, what are they hiding? Nobody's hiding anything.
It's unbelievable.
There's bigger fish to fry. It's going to happen. Give us a few days.
Jeez.
Anyway, they're here now. And I'll tell you what, I've barely scratched the surface. And I feel like I've already found some really interesting talking points. None more important to me than the winner, Brad Anderson. When you look at his two entries in the post-race interview we did with him, he focused on the winning entry. We didn't talk as much about the fact that he had a second entry. And he goes into this in a little bit of detail in the interview I did over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com earlier in the week. But he had a second entry that in doubles was alive to three other longer-priced contenders in the Classic. So I wonder if in the history of the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, anybody held a stronger hand going into the Classic, where he was going to cash for 120 plus on four different horses. It was just masterfully played. And I thought, I know I shouldn't look, but I did see some people on Twitter after the interview saying, it was a shame it went to this rookie. This is a contest that should, reward. Nonsense. I mean, this guy played it like a pro, and I love the fact that we have somebody who comes to this as more of an amateur and just shows one of the great things about contests, that you can be somebody who who's played in only a handful of contests in their life. And if you approach this with a studious mindset and you have the gamble in you to push it all in, you can beat the best players in the world. That's what Brad Anderson did. And I think his plays, if you want to look at some plays, I'd start with his. I just think it was a clinic in how to not risk. I mean, he took risks, but he didn't take any more risks than he had to take. He had a cohesive strategy, executed it to perfection. And now that we've seen the plays, it was even better than what I thought when I talked to him originally. Definitely one of the great stories to come out of there. Another one, people have brought this up, and I'm loath to talk about this guy given our history, but it's interesting. And I don't mean to knock him, but I just think it's interesting to see that when I saw Nissan Gabe playing for a $1 million bonus, I saw that he ended up with $40,000. Maybe it's random. Maybe he hit a part of what he wanted to hit in the last race and ended up. For some reason, even though he had one of the great expected value opportunities of all time with $40,000 to bet into the Classic with $1 million on the line, elected to keep his hands in his pocket. No idea what was going on there. I won't be asking him, but maybe somebody else out there who's in his social circles can try to figure out what's going on there. There's sure to be a story as far as that goes. The other big headline I have is just looking through, I haven't vetted all the plays, but looking at a representative sample of the plays, it still amazes me year in, year out, how few people have a chance to win with the way that they approach it. Now, I'm not judging. That might be because they've won their way in and they figure, hey, I'm going to go ahead and play just like I was going to play anyway. And hey, if I get up into the lower rungs of the prize pool, get an NHC seat, that's great. But it really, with as much money as at the top in this contest, with now over $1 million on the line, and we did see this. I did see some wise guy advantage player types who I'm not used to seeing in contests. I did see them participating in this event, and I think we're going to see more of that in the future. This isn't just a great handicapping contest opportunity to me. This is a great gambling opportunity. I think people in the gambling world who don't even know horses but understand tournament strategy, like people from the poker world, sports bettors, they should all be playing in this contest. The value is incredible. I truly believe it is a positive expectation opportunity if you're willing to push it all in strategically throughout the course of the event. It remains one of the most interesting contests out there, and you can learn so much. We're going to do a whole show next week. I think I'm going to have a couple of contest players on to pick some points that they want to talk about the plays, but there's so much to be learned going over these plays, Steve. I think we should definitely spend, I've only scratched the surface, and I feel like those are pretty good talking points. I feel like there's a lot more meat on this bone for some point over the winter.
Well, and you talked about keeping the hands in the pocket or the money in the pocket. You know, one of the interesting points for analysis was Dick Girardi, and you know, Dick had the big hit with Bricks and Mortar over United, and he had the $2,000 exacta essentially that brought back $137,000, and had him sitting in a terrific spot going into the nightcap, and he did not bet the nightcap. And he basically, I think, I haven't reached out. I really should get Dick in and see what his thoughts are, because, he had satisfied, and that's a question too. I mean, in terms of the structure of how many bets to make on Friday and, the minimum amount of bets to make on Saturday, and then the per race bet. If once you've satisfied that, that set of standards, what do you do? I mean, at that point, Dick could have gone in further, or had he satisfied the conditions?
I feel like he had two choices. One was to do what he did. That was a good total. That was winning total. It's a tough time to put that number up there because you've got all those people behind you. You've got so many people from second down to 40th with money on their bankroll for whom the correct move is to shoot for him. But the reality is a lot of people aren't going to shoot for the top. They're going to look and say, hey, well, if I get to 100, I can win an extra 100,000 in prize pool. That's enough. So I think the thought process was take the chance that there's only going to be a handful of people shooting for that new high winning type total, and hope to basically get away with it. The other thing I've seen people do in that situation is play it like it's Jeopardy and take basically subtract the second player's total from theirs, keep a few dollars on the bankroll, and then bet that little bit of money trying to top up and move the goalposts. But it probably comes down to what your opinion is in the race too. I mean, if he didn't have an opinion in the race, I feel like you thought it was an open race, which I think a lot of us, there was certainly a reasonable supposition. You do what he did, and you know what? It's not so bad to end up where he ended up. Still cut a wide swath out of that prize pool. But I would love to hear the specific thinking, and obviously he's a great guest to have on anyway. So I'll definitely be listening in when Dick comes on at the races.
You look also at runner-up Bill Schenvert and his trifecta play in the Classic. He just demolished it, and he essentially. It could have really done anything at that point. It strictly came down to how the payout resulted, because he had a Vino Rosso over McKenzie over Higher Power Mongolian Groom and code of honor. And he just kept banging that, what, 20 times?
It was interesting. There were a bunch of entries with the last name Schenberg. I think, I'm not sure which of the Schenbergs was that ended up qualifying for the tournament multiple times. And the rules allow you to transfer those entries to whomever you want, as long as they're not played one entry over the at the expense of the others. But you can see there were, if you look at all the Schenberg entries in the classic, it did seem like, and again, I don't think this is clearly not against the rules. This was all audited and passed muster. But it did seem like the you are allowed, of course, to speak strategy before the tournament begins, as long as you're not, you know, colluding with the actual plays. And it did seem like the Schenberg clan strategy was to try to crush the try in the last, preserve bankroll, crush try in last race. And so if you look at those other entries, there's other iterations, some with the same numbers, some with different numbers, trying to hit that try in the classic. And Schenberg wins the whole thing. If that entry had made all of its minimums, it wins the whole thing. And it's, you know, it's controversial. You know, in the old days of the Breeders' Cup betting challenge, you weren't allowed to make a mistake like that. You got DQ'd. Of course, that rule was the one that was manipulated by our friends a couple of years ago with Nissan Gabay's victory at Del Mar. But when they fixed the rules to make it so that you actually had to bet in the betting challenge, they did leave a proviso for people who miss a wager. So instead of the Schenberg entry that ran second being DQ'd and only getting the money on the bankroll, no prize pool, they deducted $10,000 from the total. That's actually
right.
What put Brad Anderson to the lead. It's fascinating, and you know, folks can debate from here to the cows come home what it should be. But nowadays, the rules are clear for everybody. Everybody has that opportunity. It wasn't there's no reason you'd do that strategically to lose $10,000. It was, I think, clearly just a mess up and an extremely costly one. But they won't be crying too much. It's still an impressive haul of an extra whatever it is, $125,000 or something. So they won't be. We won't break out the world's smallest violin just yet.
Well, and you know, what's amazing is that that Bill's entry missed the place that they could have bet was the turf. And you know, you talk about bankroll preservation. They basically, you know, Bill, this entry was betting $600, the you know, the minimum amount, you know, leading up, and you know, may have just either somehow lost count of the races. I mean, 600, an extra 600 would not have been, you know, a devastating amount to have gone ahead and bet. They, you know, they would have missed what that would have taken away four of their wagers. So, well, it would have taken 40,000. I mean, if they were trying to balance, you know, and I'm curious, we're going to have to find out, whether this was a balanced idea, because they lost 10,000, but the extra 600 that they had to bet, I mean, if you assume that, you know, they poured everything into the try, into $50 tries, one by one by three. And so they basically, by having that 600 on hand, they were able to pull in an extra 40,000. Then net. You know what I mean? I'm very curious about this now. We're going to have to find out, because people are saying, oh, it cost them everything. Well,
Might be right.
Although you would think you take 600 and you bet, I don't know, 300 win place on bricks, and you're pretty well assured. I don't know. At least my approach was, you know,
get
that
your
you
money
were
back at least.
Right. I mean, considering what they were doing, they had bet. You know, they had bet some exactas, mostly exactas with the 600.
Yeah, there's ways of preserving bankroll, even a show bet. I don't think it was a strategy. I think it was a mess.
They just
miscue. You do make a good point. You know, without that 600, they might have had to make, or he might have had to make a tougher decision. I'm not suggesting they played as a team. I don't think they did. You know, I'm guessing this was a case of people who handicapped together, put a wagering, had a collective wagering strategy, essentially. But, you know, somewhere along the line, somebody lost count is my best guess. But
how
it would be
that?
Interesting. I'm sure our friends in the NCRA have the contact info. Yeah.
We'll find out. Well, he's a friend of Louisiana. They're Louisiana based, and I saw where Bacik, you know, had a couple of notes about Shenvert. So we'll dig into that. I also saw where you had addressed there's some conceptual discussion about, you know, trying again to minimize the, you know, the heavy-handed element of treading water until the end. What kind of, you know, what concepts are you know being kicked around that might change that?
I think the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, I don't have a problem with it. I think for what this contest is, it works. And you know that paradigm of preserve. I mean, I feel like the paradigm's kind of been adjusted. It's no longer preserve and go in at the end. It's much more like what Brad Anderson did this year, which is preserve till you find your spot to make your first move. It's a three-pronged plan. Preserve bankroll, make a first move to really get enough so you have the powder to fire in the last couple of races. It's a little more sophisticated than what I think we were seeing maybe in the early years of the tournament. And I think that may be what this tournament is. That said, is there another evolution for another type of tournament that might provide something that would work, for example, in a TV format? And I do believe there is a way to create a new handicapping contest format, not unlike the one that we did with the TV show, the World Horse Player Tour concept, which is people do ask from time to time. And it is alive and well. Things just move very slowly in horse racing. But the idea of having some sort of final table where we could have a dynamic more like a poker tournament where we could watch that drama play out on a YouTube channel or as part of a horse racing broadcast that I think might give us the chance to appeal to the sports betting crowd, to the poker crowd, and bring some of these people from outside the gambling world in. That's one idea. The other idea is to just dramatically increase what has to be bet. And I don't think that would be super comfortable for players. I feel like they're in a pretty good spot right now in terms of comfort of the larger audience of what you have to bet when. But the other way to make these contests considerably less back-heavy would be if you wanted to create a format where you just had to bet a lot more money a lot sooner and do a lot more to earn your right to get to day two or to get to the middle of day two or the end of day two before you could make those pushes in. So a cut line might do that, or just seriously increased minimum wagers. But look, I'm just brainstorming about other. I like the idea that there's a lot of different formats, and I don't think there's anything wrong with the current Breeders' Cup format. I think that's where my opinion and the things I was saying on Twitter differed with some folks were, you know, complaining about it in a much more way, like it was a problem. I don't think it's a problem. I just think it's interesting to explore other ideas, particularly with the long-term goal of maybe finding a format of this that's going to really work on video, because I think that could really help racing as an overall marketing tool.
Now, it obviously you're not going to you can't go unscathed when it comes to pleasing everybody on these fronts, but you know it certainly from a numbers standpoint, I know from talking to Tim Schramm, this was the best results yet. Yeah, I mean, the most players, the most churn, you know, the numbers were at an all-time high, and it obviously helps contribute to you know what was a strong handle cup in light of, you know, some numbers from in terms of horse headcount and number of betting interests that were lower. So and especially in the I guess in the classic it was a matter of It was a matter of real, it's interesting, real, a real question of how open the race was. You know, it's one of those situations where, you know, you go, you look back and you say, well, the two horses that absolutely made the most sense to run 1-2 ran 1-2. And that's certainly easy afterward.
Going in, though, I was one of the many people who wouldn't have been surprised if something crazy had happened. You know, it's so easy with hindsight, it's so easy to make life so much simpler than it actually is. But the betting numbers were tremendous. I think it was $3.1 million. And that's just, you got to remember, that's just in the context of the contest. So those same players who are betting that money that accounted for whatever it was, 17% of the on-track wagering handle, when you think about the money that they bet in horizontals outside the contest or in verticals, whatever they did outside the contest, you think about guests that they brought that might have been betting. I think you could safely say that the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge is responsible for 25% of the on-track handle. That's an insane number, and I think people need to take a look across the country. I mean, there are plenty of live bankroll contests out there now, but I still think there's room for growth and there's room for places. There's a few key spots on the calendar that I feel like could be filled in with other events to start making this a little bit more like a proper live bankroll tour that culminates with the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. And when it comes, you see the amount of money they bet and the stories that come out of it. I mean, I get it. There are some tweaks I'd probably make if it was just left entirely up to me. But I also get the idea after a year like this, after they solve some of the problems or all of the problems from a couple of years ago, that if they want to say at this point, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But the Breeders' Cup, they're typically doing a good job on the contest side these days of looking forward and trying to continue to make this better. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see the exact same thing next year, but if they wanted to make some tweaks, I'd certainly be happy to chat with them and offer a few opinions on how maybe to do that. But you can't argue with the money from a financial point of view.
Well, one thing that, and we invite, we'll send out the link again. Pete, I know, sent it, and I sent it, it's, you know, been circulated, but we'll do another one. And one of the things you'll note is really the reinforcing of the, you know, the motif that it only takes one or two opinions that fall into place to make your cup. And obviously, you know, when guys are betting $1,000 exactas and $2,000 doubles and whatever, you know, it's magnified. But, you know, just lop off the zeros to whatever appropriate level you're playing and understand. And it really reinforces that message. I mean, there's the vast majority of the top finishers, you know, had, you know, one really big score generally, and then maybe one or two reinforcing hits.
That's right. And you can see even now, I was arguing with Tommy Mathis about this in text yesterday.
It's hard to believe.
You know, well, this day and age, you can't just make a play in the last couple of races. Well, you know, the results say otherwise. You know, if you're a trifecta player and you can just preserve bankroll and you can crush one of the last two races, you know, you might not win, but you can get yourself a six-figure chunk of prize pool. Is that the best strategy in 2019? I don't think so, but it can still work. It really, the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, to me, another thing looking at the place, really does go to show it only takes one. I think in this day and age, if you want to win, it probably takes two or three. But it really, if your risk tolerance is high and you're somebody who's used to playing trifectas, you can be right one time and absolutely crush this thing. So it's just a great opportunity for horse players that I still, even though as great as the numbers are, 450 entries, I mean, there should be 1,000 in it before too long, as far as I'm concerned. It's just a fantastic opportunity if you like playing the horses and you like money.
Well, in another one of the things that we talk about, the fact that you can win money on other days beside Breeders' Cup weekend. How about Mark Streif from Mission Viejo, who won the Del Mar Fall Challenge over the weekend, and in fact, back-to-back wins in the Fall Challenge for Streif.
He's unbelievable.
And, yeah, I mean, it's really quite something. And actually, Mike Rosenthal from Vegas, he had a nice, good second in here, not, I think, $600-$700 behind. But $25,000 in cash, and Streif also had hit for $18,705. That was the bankroll. So $43,000 and change there, and then a BC for next year worth $10,000, and Rosenthal comes off with an $8,000 entry for next summer's Del Mar Challenge, plus he made $10,000. So really some nice returns in the first of the Del Mar winter season, the Bing Crosby season challenges.
Streif is a player worth pausing on. He is one of the most underrated live bankroll players of all time. He's won Santa Anita tournaments. He's obviously won these Del Mar tournaments. He's an NHC Tour winner, so he's versatile. He's quiet. He's soft-spoken. He does not like I've sat with an interview for him, but you could tell he wasn't comfortable, and I never have properly written about him, and I'd love to change that someday. He's obviously just a very talented player, known for a chip-in-a-chair mentality, the kind of guy who can be down to very little money and fight his way back all the way to the top. Haven't seen exactly what his path to victory was, but I haven't seen his name on the leaderboard. I assume he just clobbered the last race to get the victory. And then, yeah, looking at this leaderboard, a bunch of notable names in this top five. Don Chung ran fifth. He is a former winner of the Woodbine Mile contest that I think people really need to put on their radars. Great time to be in Toronto in the fall, and that's a great event that I feel like we need to get even more USA participation in. Brandon Moran, he coming off a big hit in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, backed it right up with a fourth there. And then you mentioned Mike Rosenthal, who was second, and Roger McDowell, who was third. Two of those aforementioned, like, Vegas wise guy advantage player types who I noticed, I think they were playing. They were in the contest, one of the contest rooms anyway, at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, and good to see people with that sort of gambling mentality getting involved in these contests and showing that they can perform at a high level as they did at Del Mar. But the real story, Mark Streif getting it done yet again at the Del Mar Fall Handicapping Challenge. Just a great, great live bankroll player, and one who's I think his publicity shyness is maybe part of the reason he's underrated. But I know the quality of player he is, and try to, even though I haven't talked to him very much, try to trumpet his achievements and skill every chance I get.
Well, this weekend, as we turn our attention now, really in the wake of BCBC, we start to fill out November, December, and into January, opportunities for everybody to get their last licks in for NHC. And this weekend, Aqueduct, you got the Aqueduct Challenge on Saturday, $500 buy-in, two entries max for everybody. There'll be two seats awarded on Saturday, and registration today. Get the registration in today, 5 o'clock deadline, and I think that's the only on site this weekend. Maybe Hawthorne with a one seater on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. No, I guess. Oh yeah, absolutely. Hawthorne Club, Hawthorne, the OTB Fall Tournament, number 3 at Oakbrook, and one seat on Sunday is correct. So Chicagoland, and then there's another Hawthorne in, I think, before
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yes, right? Yes, on the that's the big one there with six seats on the 30th. So
people will be descending, I think, from all over the country. That's a famous last.
That's the Tamaro, the Tamaro Challenge. That's the Tamaro Thanksgiving turkey that
will he be making it this year?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Well,
I don't like the idea of a Vegas without Nick. That's not a pleasing thought.
No. Monmouth also on the 30th with two as well. The $250 qualifier at Monmouth, two seats, and the rest, plenty of things at horsetourneys.com and horseplayers.com as well. Pete, I appreciate it. By the way, I saw where you had a nice conversation with Steve Crist.
Wow, it was great. Oh, it was terrific. I hope people check that out. You can find that through my Twitter or InTheMoneyPodcast.com. I miss his voice so much, and he has so much important stuff to say. Definitely check that out if you get a chance.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly in the Money Players Podcast with JK. Let's take a time out here. Dick Powell is going to come in, and Dick, I got to get some insight from Dick. A cancellation, of course, if you hadn't realized that, no Happy Valley Wednesday with the situation in Hong Kong, which is seemingly getting worse. We'll get some thoughts from Dick. We'll also get the results of the Cartier Awards, as Nick Luck told you about. We'll talk to Dick Powell after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sum on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
In the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.
We're back at the races. About 5 minutes to the top of the hour, Dick Powell is going to join us. I'll mention, you may have seen earlier this morning, I know Mark Hennig circulated from the New York Racing Office about a decision for turf. And the decision came down a little bit ago, and all good. On the turf today at Aqueduct. All right. So, and that I'm going to assume this is going to mean really the rest of the next few days, because there's no forecast for wet weather. So it looks like we're going to be okay for a few more days, and knock on wood, we're getting lucky. Dick Powell joins us. And Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Dick, you know, we kicked off the coverage of HKJC in September, and we're concerned. I brought it up at the time, some of this unrest, and now a second card at Happy Valley scuttled. What are you hearing?
Well, what's concerning was I was reading the South China Morning Post, and it wasn't just protests on the main island in Hong Kong. It had actually been over at the University of China, Sha Tin, which is a mile from the Sha Tin racetrack. So I was under the assumption that Happy Valley would bear the brunt of any repercussions from the social unrest that's going on over there. But this was also related to Sha Tin, which I thought would be a little bit isolated geographically, just where it's located. So that was kind of really concerning to me, because the international races in December 8th are at Sha Tin, and this week's three Group 2 races are at Sha Tin. And so it seems to be spreading and seems to be intensifying.
Well, we'll just react as things unfold. I'm having trouble remembering how they redistributed the card that had been previously canceled at Happy Valley. Whether any fixtures that needed to be rescheduled, but in the meantime, we'll look ahead to the weekend and Sha Tin's action.
Well, we did have racing last Sunday at Sha Tin. We had an 8-turf, 2-all weather, and Zach Purton won 3. Danny Shum, the trainer, won 2. We had a 65-1 shot, a 27-1 shot, a 25-1 shot. So we had a usually wide array of mutual prices. And the current, there have been 170 races run in Hong Kong as of Sunday. The average field size is 12.16. And when you think about it, it's even more remarkable, because Happy Valley only runs 12. Sha Tin can run a 14. So they're approaching maximum starting date just about every race. The average win odds is now 10.61. So the average winner is paying $21, which is quite remarkable. There's been 4 track record sets, Steve, and I don't know if you read any of this, but last Sunday, Encouraging won 7 furlongs, 1,400 meters, in 119.92. And I guess the poor track superintendent, that they said it looked like he had seen a ghost. And he's been doing everything he can to soften the turf course up. And they've been applying water and a decent amount of water. But what happens with turf courses, and I remember Jerry Bailey talking about this years ago at Keeneland, that a turf course can get firmer when it gets wet. Now, not soaking wet, obviously, but when you got to understand, turf has dirt and grass on the top, roots. And when that dirt gets firmed up for moisture, then drying, it gets really quick, and Sha Tin has had 4 track records so far. One last Sunday. They're doing everything they can. They did the diverted drain the other day to try to ease the conditions. They haven't had much rain. They're in a pretty dry season right now. So the turf has been playing extremely fast. The running times have been extremely fast. So they have to be kind of taken with a grain of salt when you're looking back at final times, but it doesn't really affect the ratings of the horses. But that's just a trend that we've seen since the very beginning of Hong Kong racing. So yeah, lots of firm turf and fast times. Looking forward to this Sunday, big Sunday. We have three Group 2 stake races coming up. We have the Jockey Club Sprint going 1,200 meters, the Jockey Club Cup going, 1,800 meters, and the Jockey Club Mile going 1,600 meters. These are weight-for-age races, so they're not the usual handicap race that we get in Hong Kong. These are weight for age, and the conditions are such, like you see in Dubai, Southern Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere, three-year-olds, non-winners are grade ones, things like that. So, for instance, we have Horse of the Year Beauty Generation will be in race number 6. That's the Jockey Club Mile. And he is the number one horse. He drew one post position with Zach Purton. He is carrying 128 pounds. The others in there, six others, all carry 123. Of course, under the conditions of the race, if you have not won a Group 1 in the last 12 months, you get 5 pounds off. So none of them have. Beauty Generation has. So he carries 128. The rest carry 123. Now, when he got beat last time out, he was spotting 14 and 18 pounds to the two horses that finished ahead of him. So this is almost level weights for him. Like a coup who did beat him last time, picks up weight off that effort. And that big advantage that they have in handicap racing is not going to be there this coming Sunday. And nor will they be there when Longines has the four international races. Those are all weight for age type races as well. So we got three biggies coming up. They're well worth watching, especially as kind of like scouting missions for the locals as they go on to take on the world in the Hong Kong international races. So the mile attracted seven horses with Horse of the Year Beauty Generation. The Cup, which is at 2,000 meters, I said 1,800, it's at 2,000 meters, mile and quarter, that attracted nine. And Exultant is in there. He's getting back on track, and he'll be very tough. And then the eighth race is the Jockey Club Sprint, which attracted 14 horses going 1,200 meters. And what's interesting here, Steve, is the way the weights are, even though it's not a handicap, at Barrow, who has won his last four starts, and four of his five last starts, and it just looks spectacular, including the track record going to 5 furlongs, he gets in with 113 pounds because he is a three-year-old. So he gets a big weight allowance for being three. He's not a group stakes winner, so he has lots of things in his favor. As far as weight, he's number 14, but he draws post position 9 with Karis Teton and John Moore. John Moore has a bunch in this race. John Size has a bunch in this race, as they do in the other two cup races. So Ethereal gets a chance to move up to group company. He gets in perfectly weighted, so if he's going to do it, this will be the time to do it. He's very favorably rated, not weighted, rated. He's at 108. He's been on the improve every single start. And a good win here gets him into the Longines race where he can run for even bigger money. These races are $4 million Hong Kong, so they're about $600,000 US, all three races. So three big races coming up this Sunday at Sha Tin. 11:15 post time, Eastern time, now that we've set the clocks back. It's 13-hour difference, so 12:15 Hong Kong afternoon, 11:15 East Coast time for the first of 10 races, highlighted by the three Group 2 races that will serve as prep races for the Longines International races on December 8th.
Very good.
We also got Sylvester D'Souza coming back. And last year, he rode for about 2-3 months, and he rode like 55 winners, crazy amount. So he has a license from this Sunday, November 17th, to January 31st. So I would look for him to not just win a lot of races, but have a lot of business. He'll be in demand. He'll be trying to take advantage of this shortened schedule that he has his license there. And they'll make an impact. John Morera is pretty far ahead in the riding standings. And one of the things the form guy does, Steve, that's really worth looking at, is when they list out the trainers and the jockeys and the standings, and they go from top to bottom. They do a thing in the far right, races since last win. So it's like, well, that's interesting. So you look at Tony Cruz, who's always one of the leading trainers, but has suddenly gone cold. If you remember, Tony got off to a good start this year. Tony Cruz has not had a win in his last 50 starters. That's shocking. That's like Chad Brown going over 50. I mean, Tony Cruz wins a lot of races, a lot of championships in Hong Kong. But he's 0-50 with his last 50 starters. And with the jocks, Karis Teton and Grant Van Niekerk have not won with their last 17 rides. So it's a nice little thing of, you know, if someone's cooled off, and Cruz is hard to tell that he's cooled off because he's still one of the leading trainers, but they were all bunched in the beginning of the meet. Now, he's loaded for this weekend with the state races, and I don't think we'll see 0-50 much longer, but it's a great little stat to glance at to see, oh, yeah, that guy, he hasn't been winning very much lately. So just something to keep track of in the form guide.
Well, there's so much information available, and we'll keep an eye on everything going on, and both inside the track and outside the ovals. While we've got you, Dick, some Cartier award news and Nable. No real surprise, but it was a big night for Gosden overall in the Cartiers.
Yeah, Gosden had four winners. He has now trained five of the last six horses of the year, and Nable last two. And then he had horses like Kingman and different ones, Roaring Lion, things like that. So he's been just red hot. What was interesting, Steve, was seven of the eight winners were homebreds. And Gosden, even though he has expensive yearling types, most of his horses are homebred. The Judd Mont, the Weathers, Anthony Oppenheimer, people like that. So Gosden usually has the horse from an early age and sees them through their careers, doesn't pick them up in training sales or yearling sales. He does have some, like I said. But it was kind of like a nice thing to see that the people who put the money in, and in this case, two of them were Judd Mont and Godolphin, who both had two winners. Godolphin had Pinatubo, who's one of the top two-year-olds over there, was actually higher rated than Frankel was as a two-year-old. So he's everyone's looking forward to his three-year-old season coming up. And then the great Blue Point, who won two Group 1s in the week at Ascot, he was Sprinter of the Year for Gosden, and both of those horses were sired by Shamadal, who Godolphin stands, so they get like a double win when they get awards with their own horses and their own horses sired by their own horses, so that's always a good deal. But Gosden dominated. Frankie Vittori rode many of these. It was nice to see Stradivarius, who they've created this string of races for stayers, and there's a million pound bonus. And Stradivarius has now won it twice, and it gives the distance horses some nice money to race for, some prominence. They're not neglected like we kind of neglect our distance horses. And there is a market over there that we're kind of unaware of. Maybe Sid could talk about it someday. That the national hunt horses, if you're a stallion and you're kind of a stamina stallion, not a lot of speed, and you're not really fashionable as far as the racing thoroughbreds, there's a big market for these horses, and they breed enormous amounts of mares. For the really distant horse. I'm not saying Stradivarius is going to become a national hunt sire, but, you know, he's a terrific stayer. And he's by one of my favorite horses, See the Stars. I just love See the Stars when he raced. I thought he was spectacular. And he's turned into a tremendous sire. And he stands, I think his latest dead fee is $175,000, and just full book of mares, and just fantastic. But they'll run all day, and they're tough and gritty and all that. Stradivarius has everything going for him, including Frankie rides him perfectly and ekes out every ounce of talent that horse has, no matter what the ground, firm, soft, heavy, he'll get over it and try his guts out. So nice to see him get honored with another Cartier Award as the stayer. And no real surprises that I could see. They don't give the voting or the runner-ups or anything else. They just announce, I mean, as far as I could see, they just announced the winners. So no real surprises, but some of the long-term people that have had skin in the game came out pretty good.
Dick, I appreciate it. And we will convene next week. We'll start to move toward the holiday season. Some really good racing ahead, and a lot of it taking place in New York, but hardly limited there. We've got things seem to be ratcheting up in South Florida, actually, as well, seeing more and more big names on the work tab. And we got a very nice race at Del Mar, the two-year-olds on Saturday. For those that didn't look ahead yet, we'll start to look at it with Askin in a little bit. The Bob Hope, Baffert. Yeah, Baffert's got a very serious pair, and looking forward to that. So, Dick, I appreciate it.
All right, Steve, stay warm.
I know, huh? Crazy. Yeah. HKJC, everybody, HKJCRacing.com. Let's take a break and come back with Tony Black. I got a bunch to do with Tony, including a confrontation. I don't know. I'm kind of dreading Collegeville girl hooking up with Carlisle Bell on Saturday in the 7th at Aqueduct. And yeah, Collegeville girl will be winging on the front end, like Tony's taught her. And Bell's going to try to, you know, rally and close. So it's the classic speed versus closer scenario. Tony Black. We'll get some Breeders' Cup thoughts from Tony as well, because we really didn't. He had to miss one, and then we never got to him last week. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.
friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sum on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
You say you stand by your man. Tell me something I don't understand. You said you love me, that's a fact. And then you left me, said you felt trapped. Well, some things you can't explain away. But the heartaches in me feel this day. Stand by me.
We're back at the races, 15 and 2, hour 2 on this Thursday. Steve Haskin to join us in a little bit. We'll catch up with Rich Ang as well. And actually, I should send a note to John White. John had people visiting, family or friends visiting, and so he was out of touch for the middle part of the week, beginning of the week, so maybe we can get John on as well. And, of course, tomorrow, weekend preview, plenty of good racing, including a Titanic New York bred filly and mare confrontation. Collegeville girl versus Carlisle Belle.